Good morning, and welcome to Greater Good Magazine. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being, and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. 4 steps for inviting people to discover common ground. Simon Greer offers 4 principles for everyday conversations that could help bridge our differences. By Simon Greer, March 25th, 2026. In the current political climate in the United States, when large majorities of Americans are exhausted by the divisiveness, terrified about political violence and threats to our democracy, and worried that our best days are behind us, the idea of bridging differences could seem foolish, impossible, or even dangerous. How can we even begin to find common ground with the other side when we seem to occupy 2 different realities based on 2 different and competing sets of facts? Why should we even give any daylight to viewpoints that seem to be completely at odds with our most cherished values? Doesn't even entertaining ideas that we see as hateful, outlandish, or demeaning give them weight and legitimacy? I completely understand those concerns and recognize that it can be tempting to write off those with whom we disagree. On many days, I am tempted to do the same. Yet I firmly believe that now, perhaps more than ever, is the time when we need to build stronger connections across lines of difference in this country. And I believe it's possible. My optimism comes from more than a decade of work bringing together people on opposite sides of contentious issues. College students from liberal and conservative campuses, progressive leaders heading to Israel and the Palestinian territories, formerly incarcerated criminal justice reform leaders and union leaders representing correctional officers, Trump and Harris supporters leading up to the 2024 election, and many others. Time and time again, the people I engage with come away with a deeper understanding of one another, less hostility, and a greater likelihood of finding solutions to shared challenges, or at least of preventing their disagreements from spiraling further into further rupture or even violence without abandoning their values or beliefs. How does this happen? My approach rests on 4 main principles, the 4 components of what I will call the invitation. When I invite people into dialogue, I do it with these 4 basic terms. 1, my intention is to take seriously the things that others hold dear. If it matters to you, then it will matter to me. 2, I am not here to convince anyone they are wrong or try to change them. I am curious why people think the way that they do. 3, rather than thinking I am diminished by listening carefully to ideas I might disagree with, I trust that I am enhanced by listening to them. And 4, I believe there is more common ground and experience than I anticipate. And when there is not, I can fundamentally disagree with someone and still respect, even love them. While many of the stories shared in this piece come from the realm of organized, courageous conversations that I facilitate, as well as public programs that I host, my experience is that that as the toxic rhetoric increases and polarization drives us further and further into our camps, some of the most powerful rewards of practicing this invitation start personally and build out from there. From the dinner table to the classroom, then on to our congregations and our workplaces, and eventually into our local and even national politics. If we think differently about how we relate to those we disagree with, we can begin to transform not only our immediate relationships, but also our broader culture. This way of engaging is not going to solve all the challenges that we face in our country. Conversations alone are not enough to reduce extreme polarization and partisan conflicts. We are in a very difficult time. I too would like to see greater economic opportunity, greater worker ownership, a primary system that doesn't play to the extreme voices, and an election system that incentivizes collaboration. I long for social media platforms that reward nuance rather than outrage and a rededication to national community service that would knit future generations together. Those structural solutions to the crisis we have created seem like a far-off fantasy today. And I believe that we first need cultural shifts in how we see and talk to one another. That can start with how each of us relates to that uncle who voted differently, that colleague who posted something on Slack that rubbed us the wrong way, or a fellow congregant who spoke disparagingly about a point of view that we hold. If we weave these four principles into everyday conversations, we can promote cultural shifts that build the foundation for broader movements for change. Number one, take seriously what matters to others. My intention is to take seriously the things that others hold dear. If it matters to you, then it will matter to me. It's tempting to overlook this step, but it's crucial. If you share something important to you and I dismiss it, rushing to refute it or shift focus to my own priorities, why would you be interested in hearing from me? Taking your concerns seriously doesn't mean agreeing. It means recognizing their importance to you. This is a key point that is often overlooked. If I convey to you honestly that I hear the value for you of what you are saying, and because of that, I will pay attention to it, that earns trust. This principle often arises in my work with evangelical Christians. As a Jew, Jesus is not central to my life or theology, but for my evangelical friends, he is the Christ, and nothing is more important. If I were to dismiss their discussions of their relationship with Jesus, it would quickly undermine our trust. listening attentively and valuing their perspective, even if it isn't mine, fosters trust, respect, and understanding. In turn, this openness encourages them to honor and acknowledge my deeply held beliefs. Later down the road, we can unpack our differences and be direct with each other about the tensions that we might have based on these deep differences, but that will go much better if we have acknowledged those things that we each hold dear. 2, cultivate curiosity over convincing. I am not here to convince anyone that they are wrong or to try to change them. I am curious why people think the way that they do. Initially, many of us who are committed to pushing back against the current political crisis might find this approach challenging. For those focused on changing hearts, minds, and behaviors to address perceived injustices, it can seem counterproductive to commit to conversations without the goal of at least pursuing change. I tried leading with persuasion for many years and learned that instead, exhausting my capacity to understand others transforms the conversation's potential. When I enter a conversation with the sole aim to convince, discussions often become narrow and rigid. Approaching a conversation with curiosity instead opens space for it to evolve. Letting go of the belief that success requires winning someone over broadens possibilities. Adopting a posture of authentic openness, acknowledging my own blind spots and willingness to be changed, significantly shifts the conversation's energy. I've witnessed this repeatedly in my work with corrections officers. Those working in prisons and jails often feel so under siege that exploring new possibilities can seem impossible. However, when I invest time listening, show genuine curiosity about their experiences, and avoid pushing my own views about the terrible flaws in the system, I find that they don't just open up to new ideas, but also have plenty of them. If I focus on persuading a corrections officer about the need for more programming for people who are incarcerated, I'm likely to encounter arguments about staffing shortages and safety concerns. But if I approach the conversation with sincere interest in understanding their work, the risks that they face, their analysis of the problems, and their definition of success, the tone shifts. They often share moments when they felt supported, safe, and able to help an incarcerated person transform their life. They actually long for those moments as well. Being truly curious about their challenges create space for meaningful dialogue and potential for new solutions. I often have seen a similar dynamic unfold in the wake of the 2024 election and the beginning of Trump's second presidency. Many liberals find it hard to see common ground with those who support Trump, and when they talk with a Trump voter, are often quick to detail all of the crimes that they see the administration perpetrating. But just as I've learned in other challenging conversations, curiosity goes further than trying to convince. If you approach this moment determined to change minds, you're likely to meet or even deepen resistance. What's important is to stay present with the specific individual who is in front of you. Remain curious about how this person came to this position and avoid lumping all Trump voters with all MAGA enthusiasts and with President Trump himself. This flattening of 75 million Americans into one narrow identity does them a disservice. If you take time to understand the fears, frustrations, and hopes that influenced people's votes, the conversation can expand. In that expanded conversation, there is at least the possibility of getting beneath the headlines, understanding the deeper motivations and the underlying worldview that leads to their positions. If nothing else, from there you are better positioned to engage meaningfully about the things that matter rather than exchange jabs over headlines based on caricatured understanding of the other person. Maybe you will learn something that surprises you, or maybe you will just be better equipped for more effective persuasion the next time around. Maybe they will surprise you, and the very places where you thought the deepest divisions would show up are actually places with more common ground than expected. 3. Be enhanced by disagreeable ideas. Rather than thinking I am diminished by listening carefully to ideas I might disagree with, I trust that I am enhanced by listening to them. A common perspective today views exposure to opposing opinions as harmful. Some people argue that allowing the expression of differing views can amount to platforming hateful ideas or threatening deeply held values. As a result, organizations from college campuses to radio shows often refrain from featuring unpopular perspectives for fear of criticism, protests, or other social consequences. However, as research by Cass Sunstein and others has found, these kinds of ideological echo chambers exacerbate polarization. When groups wall themselves off from opposing views, their own beliefs tend to grow more extreme. In this third element of the invitation, I advocate a different approach to ideas that we find disagreeable, uncomfortable, or even insulting. Rather than viewing these ideas as threats to be shut down, we can see them as valuable sources of information. While some may fear that exposure to opposing ideas will spread them further and do greater harm, my experience suggests the opposite in two important ways. First, when the mean, inaccurate, or even hateful thing gets said, if I give it space, it doesn't often gain momentum, but rather peters out, reveals the cracks in its own internal logic, or leads to a qualification or seed of doubt shared by the very person who said it. That is not the case when I try to land a quick counterpunch or turn away from the person. Second, counterintuitive as it may be, engaging with deeply divergent ideas often clarifies and sharpens our own beliefs. It can help to refine our own thinking and allow us to explore our blind spots. While we may not always become more receptive to those with whom we disagree at least we will know accurately where we and they stand. The immortal words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. point us in this direction. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And in my experience of working very hard over the years to convince people to see things my way or to confront their blind spots, it was when I slowed down, listened more, and opened up that those I disagreed with actually became more open to examining their own blind spots, revealing nuance and shifting their ground. Number 4, love your neighbor. I believe there is more common ground and experience than I anticipate. And when there is not, I can fundamentally disagree with someone and still respect, even love them. My approach to this work and the invitation is not about seeking watered-down compromises or some vague kumbaya middle ground, but rather about managing deeply held fundamental disagreements. While I am, of course, a fan of bipartisanship, focusing on collaboration where we can find agreement, this invitation centers more on pluralism, the way we live together with our deep divides. In this fourth element, we are hopeful that we will find more common ground and agreement than expected. Research on moral foundations theory shows that people across ideological divides often share core values, such as care, fairness, and loyalty, but prioritize them differently. Recognizing these shared values can foster respect and rapport, even in the midst of disagreement. Still, there will be times when we have no common ground or shared experience and face fundamental disagreements. For example, my friend Elizabeth is evangelical and believes that I will not have eternal life because I have not accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. My colleague Danielle believes we need to strongly defend the Second Amendment to keep our community safe. My friend Lori works faithfully as an ultrasound technician in a pro-life movement. In each case, we have deep disagreements. The popular wisdom today is to walk away from these people, call them out, or cancel them. But I am of a different mindset. In these cases, I have actually learned from them, and I believe they have from me as well. Our positions on the issues that divide us have not transformed, but our relationships have. By going further than simply respecting or tolerating those differing views, by committing to love these people, we rebuild our capacity to live together, lean into our differences, solve problems, and ultimately change the culture. Techniques for practicing the invitation. Practice taking seriously what matters to others. Rooted in active listening, this approach can foster trust and reduce defensiveness. Practice curiosity over convincing. A simple way to practice the second element of the invitation is by asking open-ended questions, those that cannot be answered with a simple yes or no. These questions include encouraging the speaker to delve deeper and share more rather than feeling defensive. Examples include, what was it like for you? Can you tell me more about that? What would be an example? Practice strong back, soft front. Stay rooted in your beliefs while remaining open-hearted. Imagine standing tall with a strong back, firm in your values while maintaining a soft front, a posture of curiosity and compassion. And finally, practice loving your neighbor. When speaking with those interested in exploring bridge building, I often ask them to recall a recent time when they learned something from a conversation with someone whose views differ greatly from their own. By committing to spend time with those who see things differently and practicing this kind of deep listening, even when it's really hard, we can begin to make meaningful progress toward solving the problems we face together. You've been listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, thanking you so much for listening today, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.